This is the best of TMA from Cardinals spring training this week on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rick Ankiel. Hello, Rick. Listen to this crowd. I've never heard anything like it.
Sorry you had to sit through that.
Thanks
Rick.
For having me.
I know. I honestly thought
shot.
You might just get up and leave
shot.
While that was going on.
It's a terrible
It
shot.
Would have been ideal if you could have sat down just maybe a couple minutes later so you would have never had to witness the whole thing.
I would have took the mic and started asking questions.
You want to go out there.
What time is your tea time today?
Yeah, I would like to play. Rick is sitting down with us here, and it's always great to have him on the radio show. But even better this year because you have your book coming out on April 18th, correct?
Yes.
April 18th. I have been hoping that you would do something like this, and now it is complete, and it's going to be hitting bookstores on April 18th. How proud are you of the work that you put in to make this whole thing possible?
Very proud. It took a long time. You know, it's over 3 years. You know, just going back and forth with the writer, but now we're finally at the finish line here with the finished product. And as you said, April 18th will be the release date, and should be fun.
With everything that you've been through growing up, you know, under some circumstances that were tough to make it to the big leagues, to have what happened with your pitching and then totally reinventing yourself after that, I would think that that's the kind of story that can inspire people that, it's never really over until you say it's over. Is that why you wrote that?
Yeah. You know, I think the overall lesson from the book is about just getting back up. You know, you're going to get knocked down. Everybody gets knocked down in every walk of life, right? You know, life is beautiful, and then it's messy, and then it's beautiful again. I mean, that's just human. That's human life. So, you know, there's definitely those lessons in there when you look at my story. You know, another reason I chose to write it is, you know, my little boys are 4 and 6 now, and they're getting to the age, I think, where they're going to start asking, and it's their story too. So, you know, now I got it all out there. A lot of things I didn't talk about when I was going through it, you know, what I was going through mentally and what it was like all the time. And you got to give the writer just a pat on the back. He did a phenomenal job of really putting you inside of my brain and helping you understand what I was going through in a lot of those moments.
You know, having talked to folks who have written books about some difficult moments, they say it's tough because part of you always recognizes what you went through, but you don't really revisit it a lot. And to open up and to explain where you were mentally and how difficult, was that a difficult process for you?
Oh, yeah, really, really tough. And it's funny, you know, you know, I'm not really somebody who reflects a lot. I'm always looking forward, trying to, you know, who am I going to be today and who can I be tomorrow and how can I better myself in those ways. And I think, you know, for me going through a lot of that was so traumatic that I didn't want to go back. And so you're right. I never really went back and revisited those memories. And I remember the first time we sat down and pulled up the pitch in the playoffs from the, you know, 2000 and watched it. And I was like, wow, I can't believe how under control I appear with my body language. Because inside I was just a mess and, you know, not really understanding what was going on and trying to figure it out of like, what in the hell is happening right now. So, yeah, you're exactly right that you don't go back, or I didn't go back and revisit those. But to go back and go through it and just to know where I was to where I am now, I'm very proud of that.
Rick Ankiel is sitting down with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After, 590 The Fan, KFNS, and InsideSTL.com. So what was the impetus for you to go, you know what? I want to put this all out there. I'm going to write a book, or I'm going to work with. And who is the writer, by the way? Is Tim Brown.
Tim Brown. He's actually here. We should get him
is that right?
on the radio.
Oh, that'd be super strong. Yeah, absolutely. Right? Tim Brown, who's a great baseball writer. He's actually the one who I recall the cat when Pujols decided to go to the Angels. He broke the story in the offseason after 2011. So he's a great baseball writer. So what did somebody approach you, or did you go, you know what? I want to tell my story. How'd it work?
You know, I got approached a lot, and I got approached even to make a movie when I was still playing, and I always just thought that was bad timing. I was still in uniform. I thought that would be not only a distraction to me, but to my teammates. It was just something that I didn't want. Once I was done playing, I had time to sit down and you know, think about what all this meant. You know, and some of it I was a little hesitant. I wasn't sure that I really wanted to go back and relive some of this, and not just me, but my family. You know, because they got to go back through it too. In talking with my agent Scott Boris and a few other people, just realizing that, hey, you know, you can really inspire people and help people, and you know, kind of as we talked about how to get back up, or just getting back up and not letting life beat you down all the time. You know, once I realized that, I was like, yeah, you know what, I'm on board.
Yeah. And, you know, Joe Buck just did his book, and he said, you know, I was surprised he got into, at least beforehand, he told me he was going to get into his divorce and get into some personal things. And I go, man, from a legal standpoint, I don't know if you can do that. You never know what the terms are on those things and all right. that stuff. But he goes, if I was going to tell my story, I wasn't going to leave anything
right.
out. And it sounds like that's...
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. And I thought it was important, too, to go back and, you know, one thing is to always try to understand what makes people tick, right? And if, I mean, you have to take a look at my entire story because it is part of the story. And you talk about the background and all that, you know, all the personal stuff that I went through. So, you know, all that's in there. You know, that you'll just see lessons on how to get back up. I mean, I think that's the best way to put it.
That's the ultimate getting back up story. You told me something, and I think you were mad that I asked you about it because we had talked about it before. But it's out there, and I know you want to – it's one of the good details in the book that I find amazing. So – uh-oh, they're bringing in a right-hander. So – so,
go ahead, sorry.
Right, so you had just said, that's it, I'm done, okay? You had announced to the Cardinals – I'm not going through this anymore. It's not working. I can't pitch anymore.
And this is spring training 05?
Spring training 05.
Okay. Yeah. So he gets done with this, okay? And he feels like a weight has been lifted off his shoulder. Now we can focus on what's next. He gets home, and he told me he was at peace with everything. And then he gets a call from his agent. Tell us, you know, what that was about and how that sort of changed the direction.
Yeah, so I'm getting, you know, obviously people checking in, are you okay, et cetera, and Scott Boras is checking in, and I think it's only been a few hours. You know, I'm still sitting on my couch just kind of looking around like, all right, this feels kind of nice. I don't have to deal with, you know, everything that came with trying to throw strikes. And he's like, hey, are you ready to go play again? I'm like, what are you talking about? Is nobody listening to me? I just retired. I just stopped pitching. He's like, no, are you ready to go play? And I'm like, he's like, do you want to be an outfielder? And I'm like, man, timeout. You know, it just took me however long to get to this point. So long story short, I call him back. A few hours later, I call him back, say, hey, you know what? I'm on board. He's like, let me call the Cardinals and ask. Calls me back. He says, hey, Cardinals are on board. Walt Jocketty be calling you. Walt Jocketty calls me and says, hey, tomorrow you're an outfielder. We'll see you in the morning.
So when you was that Boras' idea? Was the outfielder thing Boras' idea?
It was Boras' idea. So come to find out later, I mean.
Tim Brown, the writer, has sat down with us. Hi,
yeah.
Tim. I'm Tim.
Fellas,
that's Jim.
Good to
hello.
See you. Thank you.
Come to find out later, Scott Boras, Harvey Dorfman were already in talks with the Cardinals. They just didn't. They hadn't told me about it. So when he spun it to me, he was like, well, I'll call out Walt and ask. But come to find out years later, they were already on board.
So what's the feeling like? You walk away. The next day, you're Rick Ankiel, the outfielder. And everyone's looking at you going, you can't do this. What's that feeling like walking in, getting dressed, going out there with all eyes on you, Rick Ankiel, the outfielder? What was that like?
That part was fun because now it was challenging. Now I want to be a hitter where when you just the day before, the year before, all eyes were on me for a different reason, right? Everybody's waiting for me to throw one off the backstop so they have a story to write about. So when that came, it was like, okay, hey, I'm having fun again. Here we go again. And, I mean, it was, you know, it was awesome.
And but, what was it like working with this guy?
It was great. And you know, I've covered baseball since 89, but there was a five-year period where I covered the NBA, and it happened to be during the time that Rick had his issues. It was like 2000 to 2005. So I missed that whole process, so watching it from afar. And when one of the things I was thinking about when you were asking about him making that transition, Harvey Dorfman, who was so instrumental in Rick's life, had felt all alone. Rick thought Harvey was trying to save his baseball career. Harvey thought he was trying to save Rick's life. Not maybe even literally, but just in terms of who he was going to be when this thing ended. And I think everybody knew at some point it was going to end and probably not pretty. And the day that the conversations between Scott and Harvey were about, look, Rick can't go be a hitter and have this top out in Double-A and have him be a failure again. This is a young man, fragile at points. And if this were to fail in 2 years and he's hitting .128 in Double-A, I'm Harvey's worried that he's not going to stand up under that. So everybody had to be sure. Scott had to be absolutely sure that Rick could come back and be a big leaguer. It was really important to Harvey that this end well, and obviously it did. So I thought those are the things I found most interesting about the book, seeing it from afar and then seeing it up close. So many curiosities for me. That was one of the things.
You know, and some of those details I didn't learn until we were going through the book process.
Oh, yeah?
Right?
Really?
So I didn't know those conversations between Scott and Harvey and Wal Jockety, et cetera. So,
you know, Tim, one of the things that I thought while Rick was playing, I thought this is the kind of story that it's just a matter of somebody to tell properly. That's sometimes our job as reporters, hosts, whatever the case might be. The story's so good, we just don't want to F it up, you know? And that's one of these stories. And so the moment in August 2007 when Rick makes his return to the major leagues and he hits that home run against the Padres, they cut to the dugout, Fox Sports Midwest does, and Tony La Russa is smiling, which isn't something that's commonplace when Tony La Russa's in a dugout. I only saw him smile one other time in the dugout, as a matter of fact, all the way back from 96 through 2011 when he managed the Cardinals, and that was in the bottom of the ninth of Game 6 of the 2011 World Series, which is like baseball euphoria. But the only other time was when Rick hit that home run. That's how much it meant to Tony La Russa. Did you get a chance to talk to him throughout this process of putting this book together?
I did, and Tony puts that in his top three or four baseball moments ever.
Wow.
Because I, you know, he was so close to what was going on there, so close to the failure every day. We go through the book, nights when you know, Rick would just collapse into his office and say, I just can't do this. And Tony would send him home, go spend the night, think it over, come back to me in the morning. You know, when things look so bleak, and Rick would show up the next day, okay, let's go, let's do this. I'm going to stand up again and get after mm-hmm. this thing. So Tony lived through so much of it with him, and also Dave Duncan, the process, the everyday, the mornings out here, out behind the trees to try to get this thing together. They'd all done a lot of work in it. And on top of it, they had to live with this thing. You know, all of them yeah. had to live with this thing and wanted so desperately to see it end well, and then it did that night.
I always felt like, and I could be wrong on this, and Rick, you may know, Tim, you may know from talking with him, that Tony felt somewhat culpable for what transpired in October 2000, and that was part of it. Perhaps the current manager feels somewhat culpable because of the famous hunting knife incident, and he wasn't there to be the catcher that day. What did you learn from the process?
I think everybody wore a little piece of it. You know, I think Rick would let everybody off the hook at that point, at any point. But I do think everybody felt like, you know, was he ready to make that start against the Braves? Was Carlos Hernandez physically capable, comfortable enough with Rick to sit back there and know what was coming and have a sense of that? You know, the whole thing sort of balled up on everybody. And yeah, Tony absolutely has regrets now about it.
You know, I think folks in St. Louis were aware of how good a hitter you were growing up and, you know, all throughout your career. But I would imagine for the Cardinals and for his management even to take a risk, not only risking the possibility it didn't work, but also as a franchise, seeming like you're giving something to someone, you have to be a pretty special athlete to get that opportunity, right?
I think that, you know, by all evidence, the high school, how he hit as a, you know, coming up through the minors, how he hit as a starting pitcher. The very first time I ever saw Rick live, I'd come to St. Louis in his rookie year to do a piece on Jim Edmonds out from L.A. Jim Edmonds is out. And I just happened to be sitting in the press box on this cold, dank night. I believe it was the Brewers in town. And Rick happens to be pitching. I'm not even there to look at Rick. And he's pitching. He comes up. And on this cold, dark April night, Rick hits an opposite field home run. The pitcher comes up and hits an opposite field home run. Like, holy cow, what is this? I think that just the athletic ability. I mean, you give away an awful lot of those formative at-bats from 18 to 25, right?
Right.
You know, when you're becoming a big league pitcher, trying to stay a big league pitcher. And I think that cost him in the long run. But the natural ability was unmistakable.
What's your gauge on the excitement level, because obviously in St. Louis everyone is really looking forward to this thing coming out. Just around the rest of the country, I'm sure there's a lot of people familiar with what Rick accomplished.
I think people are really fired up about it, because I do think there's a lot of the story that was left untold. Obviously Rick didn't want to tell and retell the story and let people in. There were walls built so he could try to beat this thing. And then once you become an outfielder, that's in the past. That's gone. The minute by minute, the day by day, the month by month has never really been told. And so I think people are really curious about, A, what happened? B, how'd you try to whip it? C, who are you now?
Yeah, I've always felt like this is a movie or 30 for 30 waiting to happen. A movie would, of course, be more beneficial if that were to actually happen. And the moment you hit that home run against the Padres, I'm like, there it is. There's the happy ending. But in order to get from spring training 05 to August 07, the thing, you did the show with Jim Edmonds and I a couple years ago, and Edmonds was talking, and when he told it from this perspective, then it drove it home even more. You go from being a major league ball player, what, 19, right, Rick?
Mm-hmm.
And you're pitching in the playoffs in 2000, 21 years old. And then 5 years later, you go through all that hell. But there's not just that part, the public part. But then now you're riding on buses, making no money, driving around the middle of nowhere, and staying in crappy hotels. I mean, it's like being a child star, essentially, in Hollywood, and then having it ripped out from you in a very public way. And the only way back is to go through this crap that you thought was, 7 years removed from. How difficult was it to go back to that and know that that was your only way out?
It was tough, but I didn't even look at it like that. I looked at it, I was so focused on making it back to the big leagues that I really just tried to focus only on my game and how to make my game better. I didn't pay attention to the bus rides or the hotels or the food's not as good, because to me that was just a distraction. If I let myself get distracted by the fact that I'm not in a 4-star, 5-star hotel, right, because I'm not in the big leagues, then I'm not doing what I'm supposed,
right,
to be doing.
Were you consumed? Was it something that consumed you to get back to the big leagues?
We could call it pretty close to being consumed.
Really?
Yeah, I would call it laser focus. I had a plan and I stuck to it. I got up every day. I did my workouts, everything that I could possibly do, extra work, all of it and the above, and just tried to stay on course.
You obviously had to have a lot of support. How do you get through that when you are trying to reinvent yourself as really no one had done before?
Because of all the scrutiny and everything that I had taken already as part of the pitching process, when I turned over to be a hitter, it was I don't want to say easy, definitely easier to understand. And as he said, I built walls. I kind of just pushed, yeah, the people that I didn't want away. I wouldn't let you in, and kept my little support team, and just off I went.
When you were going south as a pitcher, there were a lot of people rooting for you. But when you go through something like that, do you kind of feel like there is a percentage of the folks out there, like you said, kind of hoping you throw one off the backstop? I mean, is that in your mind?
I think there's, that's human nature, right? You're going to have people that support you. You're going to have people that want to laugh at you. I mean, it is what it is, right? You have the contrast of both. And I think at times, even though I had Harvey with me and I know the organization was behind me and my wife, you're really all alone. You're all by yourself. You go out on the mound, you're all by yourself. You go home at night, you're all by yourself. I think that's probably the most difficult thing, is really when you feel like you're all by yourself. It does take a support group, the right people around you to keep you going and help you stay focused.
Rick Ankiel, Tim Brown sitting down with us here. You're listening to 590 The Fan, KFNS. You mentioned externally when you watched the video of the playoff game against the Braves and perhaps the playoff game against the Mets, you were amazed by how calm you appeared, mm-hmm, outwardly, but you said you were a mess inside. Had that ever happened to you, high school and minors?
No.
Anything that never happened?
No, there was no warning signs. It was, basically it's like, here I am, just a few years removed from being the number one high school player in the year. I won the Gatorade Award to, everything I had ever dreamed of. In my mind, I wanted to be the best pitcher that ever played, and everything's unfolding the way it should, and all of a sudden it's just taken away from you. I had no idea what happened. And even if you go back and look at that interview and some of the things I said after the game, where I kind of joke about it, and I'm like, oh, it's a mechanical issue, because I really didn't even understand what was happening. I think that's another part of the hardest part of this, is that you know, even to, in today, in 2017, we can go talk to as many psychologists as we want, and everybody still really doesn't know what it is. And that's the hardest thing about it, right? If you have a you hear guys talk about a physical injury, whether it's an elbow or a shoulder, right. And they talk about how hard the grind is to make it back, where they can go talk to people like, oh, I've had that injury, and I made it back. You'll be fine. Just stay with it. But now when you all of a sudden have this mental injury, we'll call it, and I felt you just feel like you're trapped in a mental prison because it consumes you. The thought never leaves you, right? No matter what I'm doing, it always pops back up like, man, can I throw a strike today? Am I going to be able to throw a strike tomorrow? What can I do to get it right? Or I'll go throw another 50 balls off the wall behind my house. And there's nobody that can say, oh, hey, I had that once and I made it through. You'll be fine. Just keep grinding.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. Right. And that's the hardest part about it.
I had what was called Steve Sachs disease. Recall that, Tim? It was, and Knobloch had it as well, right? And if it was an easy ground ball hit to me, it was going over the first baseman's head. If I had dive, had no time to think about it, perfect throw. And so as I saw this play out, I was thinking to myself, my God, I wonder if this is what's going to happen again. But if I'm not mistaken, you have what happens against the Braves and the Mets in the playoffs, but then you come back and open up the season against the Diamondbacks in 2001, and you have like a sick start, right?
I did. Yeah.
What the hell happened?
Yeah, what happened?
Did I hit on something?
No, I don't want to give too many details away from the book.
I have heard something about that start, but I don't know if it's accurate, and I'm sure as hell not going to say it.
Should I say it now or wait for the book?
No, go.
You're the writer. It's up to you. No, you
know, no one's listening. It's a crummy
book. Yeah, exactly.
You know that by listening.
You're essentially in the witness protection program right now, Tim, so you're fine.
So before that game.
You found a way not to be on the mound alone.
Well, that's true. So you know? Before the game, I'm scared to death, right? I know I have no chance. I mean, just the day before, it was like, one day I'm okay, one day I'm not, right? So, feeling the pressure of all that, right before the game, I got a ball of vodka. just started drinking vodka, and lo and behold, it kind of tamed the monster, and I was able to do what I wanted. And I'm sitting on the bench, feeling kind of crazy, like, oh, this is crazy. I got to drink vodka to just try to pitch through this, and it worked for that game. So
wow. So that happens. Had you ever drank before a start before?
No.
I would imagine once you have that great start in Arizona. And that's the 2001 World Champion Diamondback, yep. So it's not like it's just some group of sack asses out there.
Randy Johnson, the opposing
pitcher. Oh, was it Johnson you were up against?
Randy Johnson. Yeah.
Oh, wow. How about that?
You know, it's one of those things where, you know, you just feel like the yips, the monster, this disease, it didn't fight fair. So I felt like, well, you know what, I'm not going to fight fair either.
So I imagine.
You know, one of the things that I found interesting about it, when we talked about it, it's one thing to pitch drunk. It's another thing to stand in the box left-handed against Randy Johnson.
Yeah, how'd that treat? I mean, how many balls were you seeing, Rick?
Really, let's talk about what's the scarier part here.
But you must realize that's not a sustainable, thing,
you
right?
You know, and that's exactly what happened. And
so did you drink before your next start?
I did, of course.
Yeah,
Because, hey, I just threw strikes, and let's be honest, you know. So, but, you know,
then what happened on the next
start? That's part of it, that the monster is so powerful that it can overcome anything, and it just started to overcome it, and I could feel it. And Harvey Dorfman was like, I understand you're surviving, but I'm telling you, it's not real, and it's probably not going to last.
So you drink before the next start after the Diamondback start, mm-hmm. and what winds up happening?
I just started throwing balls again.
Really?
The anxiety, the pressure, it overcame the alcohol, and then I knew, like, okay, I gotta you know, it doesn't matter. I got to do this the right way.
Yeah.
There's no way around it, you know. So.
And then back to the minors, you went, injuries and all that took place. And I'll tell you something, and Tim is covering the game as you do. The Cardinals, I think you could put it up against any organization since 2000, you know, 99 when you came up, but 2000 and the run the Cardinals have had of successful seasons. I think if you asked Cardinal fans, really hardcore Cardinal fans, their top five moments over the last 16 seasons, many would cite not the home run, although many would cite that, of course, Freeze in Game 6, Pujols against Lidge, and all of that stuff, but they would cite your throws at Coors Field. Defensive assists would be cited as two of the favorite moments in that run because of A, what it meant, but B, I don't know if anybody's ever seen anybody do that before. I mean, that was it. Was well, your teammates? No, Troy Gloss, who wasn't easily excitable.
Well, he didn't have a pulse.
he actually gave a fist bump.
Yeah, exactly. That was the phenomenon.
We've
Rick got the throw.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. Hey, thanks for giving me a little bit of excitement there.
But I was there, and you saw that, and was like unlike anything you had seen. You couldn't believe what you saw with those throws.
And I'm imagining you're just grabbing the ball and just gunning it. No thought process.
I mean, and I've told this story before on the first one with Willie Tavares at second, and there was a runner at first with one out. You know, the throw is you're supposed to throw it to second. But when I was backing up on the ball, I just had this feeling like I got him. Like, I got it. You know, it's just one of those instincts. But after the game, Tony La Russa came up and said, hey, Ank, that was a great throw, but don't ever effing do it again.
Tim, in your experience of writing and telling this story, how does this one rank? I mean, from my standpoint, this has to be – it's an outlier. It's as much of an outlier as it gets in the game.
I think it's one of the real undertold stories in the game. I think it's underappreciated. And you know, I don't live in St. Louis. I'm sure it's told and appreciated in St. Louis. But I think across the game, I think for in large part, Rick made it look so easy that I think people underestimate how hard it was, and they underappreciate what that looks like. Nobody's ever done that before. Not like that. Yeah. Nobody. Yeah, I mean, it's a unique story. And I think in the retelling of it, people might come to appreciate it more.
You're going to win an Academy Award for what's going to wind up being an adapted screenplay. That's my belief, Tim.
You. I thought you were going to say because I'm going to play Rick in the movie.
Well, maybe that might be odd. It might hurt the chances of the film.
Wait, you see my left hand.
But maybe you got sick stuff, man. I didn't know.
In all honesty, there was like a fake Rick Ankiel movie put out.
There was.
And it seemed like it was hastily put together.
I think it was called the Phenomenon.
And it was supposedly sort of loosely based on Rick without all the nuances.
Well, yeah, I didn't watch it, but I had a friend watch it, but I think he's even an A-ball in Port St. Lucie.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, thankfully it didn't do well because...
We'll do the story from here. We'll take it from here.
I actually opened the movie app one day. I was looking for an animated movie to take my kids to, and I seen it. I clicked on it. I'm going, what? I immediately called my agent, my lawyer. I'm like, somebody get on this. What's going on right now?
Well, we can't wait for the book to come out.
I can't wait for the book to come out.
And then the movie. And I'm assuming that we'll have small roles, Tim.
I would imagine,
make sure that happens. We'll play a couple of reporters.
It'd be tough to find short, bald dudes to find. to cover. If you got on the mound right now, what would you do?
As in,
would you be able to just fire in a strike like right now?
Yeah,
go ahead.
That'd be pretty close.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And then would there be, what about that snap? I mean, that thing.
The curveball's always there.
Yeah.
But saying that, hey, I came back and pitched in 2004.
I know.
So,
yeah.
And a lot of people don't know that either.
That does seem to fly under the radar, but you did in 2004, one of the greatest Cardinal teams of all time in 2014. Yeah.
This is the best of TMA from Cardinals spring training this week on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
It looks like the general manager is either ready for us or he's angry at us. That's an angry look.
Oh, my gosh. I feel like it's about to go down.
Yeah, let's do it.
Cardinal general manager John Mozeliak, this is an important moment because yesterday we had, quote, a situation. He walks up to the Plowhawk, shakes his hand, and now sits down at the Post Sports Bar and Grill picnic table, removes a rag to dry the picnic table, places the coffee down delicately.
Gently, yes.
Yeah, and prepares for this, what I was describing, Mo, as a
are
Geneva
we live?
Summit.
Are we live?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, good.
We're live to more than 10 people in St. Louis.
You were not here for the Plowboys Q&A this morning. With new parameters.
That's right.
The marching orders were to follow the rules. We think he did that. And you were not here to see it. Have you gotten any reports whether or not we did our job making sure Plowboy did his?
So let's just sort of back up a minute.
Let's back up. Back up. We're backing up.
Damn.
First and most important question is, do you think I actually care?
Clip that off.
Yep.
Clip that off.
The answer is no.
Well, you did take us to the woodshed on...
Right, but I assume, like, once that happens, it's fixed, right?
So, like, and you're glaring at me like...
had it not been, you guys think you'd be sitting here today.
we feel like it's a tradition the players have come to really love every February and March.
Have you gotten any feedback like that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I mean, I heard people asking me about you guys last week.
Oh, like, wow.
Where were you?
Yeah, see, Doug, I told you.
Really? But in a happy sort of way.
They love
us.
Yes,
no, yes. Absolutely. And I was like, well, we're trying to keep them away.
Yeah, what? Oh, I don't doubt that.
What?
And they thought that was funny. And so here we are. Mm-hmm.
Now, we made the corrections, but then we did throw another obstacle in your way. We have a giant van.
I'm going to see Mr. Tuno shortly.
Uh-oh. Don't, why him?
Would you rather me pick someone else?
Brian Bartow.
You could just tell. Bartow. You could
so
just.
Is Bartow a pushover? And
no. No.
You just asked
a question.
Are you on the team anymore? Or are you just sort of like quiet Bob?
I'm just
cut that off.
I'm trying to get off this job.
I hear you.
I've got applications in all
of it. You could just say you could move that van. You understand that because of the rain, we needed a plan B, and it's a big, spacious van. And we thought we could scurry into the van and keep the broadcast going because, as you know, we have many, many listeners who enjoy the program.
Yep.
You know, this is concerning.
Uh-oh. Are we doing a selfie?
No.
Oh, all sweet. Right. You do Snapchat?
I'm going to take a picture.
Pretend he's taking a selfie.
Before I have that toad.
Evidence. That's
yes,
evidence.
Exactly. So,
yeah, I noticed when you pulled in this morning, you kind of gave that van the once over. You're like, that's probably not Molina's car.
That came to mind for sure. But it sticks out. It was actually affecting how I park, and therefore it becomes a problem. And I know that sounds awful, but move it. Now.
John Mozeliak, kind enough to sit down with us here on the radio program. They moved everything up. Now, we feel like everything revolves around us, of course, but it actually had to do with the storms. But now, no storms this morning, at least so far, knock on picnic tables.
I prepared for rain, but so far it's stayed away, which is good. Can get our work in and have a successful day, hopefully.
As they plan the day, though, do they give any thought to, hey, if we go out early, that's less player availability for the
local
Brian
media.
Kelly morning after. Maybe we move it back and we'll take a chance with the
rain. I think Mike mentioned that to me this morning.
You and Doug, I told you they talked about us.
You think maybe we overestimate our place in the
skipper, I really don't.
I said, Skip, yeah, that's a great idea. It's very thoughtful. I mean, look, Skipper gets beat up a lot for, you know, not being as gracious with his time or to perhaps the media. But I just want to let you know, he was thoughtful about this.
I didn't know that. Yeah. We're learning all kinds of things here this morning.
Mm-hmm. I don't think he gets beat up too bad. Do you? Is he really sensitive that the media's hard on him?
Oh, I don't know if he's sensitive or not. I'm just merely saying he was looking out for all of you.
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice gesture. Maybe you should be quiet, Bob.
Well, I'd like to.
We're making progress here with the general manager, and you're putting a negative spin on it.
Well, if they feel like we're being unfair, I think we should know that. And
we asked about frozen pizza.
I wasn't implying that at all. I was just merely saying he was just hopefully making sure that your accommodations and your access to players was meeting your expectations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
See?
Well, it does. Yeah, okay. I feel a little bit better about that.
Let's not antagonize the guests.
Well, I don't want to make enemies.
I feel you are. and more importantly, I don't think you understand how welcoming we try to be to your team. But maybe we just get rid of Doug and you guys feel good.
But that would be okay.
In fairness,
like that idea.
There are a lot of changes, and I was concerned.
Day-to-day contract, huh, Timmy?
That's the way it is. Independent contractor. Well.
He also has my boss at Fox's number on speed dial. He tells me that, too.
That's true.
That could end. But, right, there, I mean, people get wanded coming in. It's Major League Baseball protocol with security in mind. We all get that. And the fact that we're still at a picnic table in the general vicinity of the clubhouse, I think it's a minor upset. Was that ever something that you guys looked at, or are we such a small, tiny blip on the radar that it wasn't even a thought of?
No, I can honestly say, which I don't know how much I have said today has been honest, but I can honestly say that we did think about your group, and we didn't want you like on that side of the fence. We thought this would work out splendidly, and I hope it has.
Take that kill coin. Take that kill coin.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a good show yesterday.
Now you just made a sound like you were exasperated. Oh. Why is that?
Well, it was long. Hey, Mo, can I get you for a couple minutes? Yeah, sure, Martin.
And then what happened?
It wound up 17 minutes later. Exhausting. Exhausting.
Nice. Take that, midday grind.
After all these years, has Martin come any closer to crafting a decent question?
Yes. Yeah. Right, talented individual. You guys are lucky to have him on your show.
Oh, so you're taking that's a shot at Marlowe then.
Who?
Clip that off immediately.
John Mozeliak, kind enough to sit down with us here at the picnic table. I could be wrong on this, and I would imagine you probably have this information. Maybe there's been 1 year since, but I swear since 2011 there has been some kind of bad news right here with something that, you know, unfortunately happened, whether it be with injury or whatever the case might be.
Where are you going with this?
This sucks with Reyes, is what I'm saying.
Well, I think, you know, look, it's a business, and our business, there's injuries. I don't think you can...
Like, it's been happening. It just sucks.
Well, I know you're a fan, Timmy.
I know. And I
know you live and breathe it, but...
Isn't it weird, though, also? I mean, I'm 40 now, and I'm still kind of nerding out.
Right, wants the Navy caps on the road.
I do. I would like the Navy caps back on the road. I mean,
I'm sorry.
I think that's important.
Yeah, but let's get back to the injuries.
He didn't care about the hats.
Trying to stick it in just for you.
No, when Mr. DeWitt sits down, I'll really get into that.
Bill, avoid this table. No, I really feel like you know, injuries happen, and for us, it's you know, not to sound cold or overly businesslike, but it is spilt milk, and so you have to sort of move on. And I think the one great thing about this organization is we've always been able to take that step forward, even when we do get bad news or an injury that does look like it could slow us down. But, you know, clearly losing Reyes is not good news. I get it. Whether he was on our club when we broke camp or would he have been contributing midway through? I think the answer is yes to somewhere in that gray area. But more importantly, he's a talent, and he's not available, and that's a bummer.
I feel like when you were talking about him, whereas those of us, of course, on the outside looking in, were just like, oh, it's inevitable. He's in the rotation. You weren't as forceful with your words regarding that, and I don't know if that was psychological to make him go, okay, you got to earn this thing, or if you guys truly were like, no, I mean, there's a number of spots that are up for grabs.
Oh, absolutely. And part of when you have camp, you're trying to create depth. And, you know, this is exactly why you do that, because injuries do happen. And, you know, hopefully this is our one bad piece of news throughout the year, and we can move forward.
How do you analyze the other guys in the mix for a spot in the rotation to replace Reyes?
Well, I think clearly it's Walker's job to lose. And, you know, when you look at sort of his last few years, health has sort of been driving his ups and downs. And, you know, he changed his offseason programming. He feels stronger. He's definitely more confident in what he's capable of doing. And I think our expectations with him are going to be high. But now, given Reyes's injury, it certainly opens up the door for him.
In terms of what he's been through, because it's a unique thing and it's kind of recurred in a different area, I mean, health-wise, do you look at him as a probability of getting through, as a question mark, when you try to assess what he can be this year?
I think that's a fair question, because when you look at his performance over the course of a six-month season, you have seen it regress in the outer months. So I think that's what we have to focus on, preparation and making sure that we can get him through that. So what does that look like, or what does that mean? And that means understanding volume, innings, pitch counts, and trying to see if we can find a way to protect him. And then, you know, when you look at our schedule, especially in April, a lot of off days, and I think this is something that we can manage.
It has to be hard as a general manager to know.
Look at it. Look what it is.
What, did you want me to interrupt you?
Bam. Now Doug's coming back.
Here comes an attack question.
Mr. Vaughn.
It has to be hard to know who to invest in as a pitcher. It seems like all the starters go through Tommy John surgery at one point or another, and you don't really know even what age. Reyes is a perfect example. It's not necessarily the pitcher who's thrown for 10 years that's going to need it. So how do you make that judgment on who to spend all these dollars on?
Well, I mean, that is the tricky part of being a general manager is to understand risk, understand how you think about your investment. But I think in someone like Reyes's case, the investment was made as an amateur, clearly talented, rose up to be one of the top prospects in the game. It's unfortunate that we lose him to injury, but I think the good news is this type of injury, players typically recover and end up contributing in a very positive way. And so my hope is he misses this year, and this time next year we're talking about him and we feel good about it.
And it seems like no one has really figured out definitively how to avoid this injury.
Well, clearly no one has. And you know, I think part of it's genetics. I think part of it's mechanics. I think part of it's workload. I think a lot of it derives from what you did when you were 10. There are a lot of different factors and variables, and some of which, even as an organization, you're never going to completely understand. Now, for the betterment of baseball, for the betterment of the organization, we certainly are trying to get a better understanding of how to protect the individual. But there's no perfect science out there to do that yet, as of yet.
As I look at the Cardinals, and one of the things you guys stressed is you got to be better defensively. And the impression you get is Colton Wong at second base will get every opportunity to make that his because he seems to be a defensive upgrade. Hadn't been the offensive force you were looking for. What are your concerns about Colton, and what are your feelings on the probability that he'll be what he's been at every level of professional baseball, offensively?
Well, I think he's a talented young man. I think given an opportunity to play every day from a defensive standpoint, I think he has a chance to be a gold glove type defensive player. I think he's got to avoid taking his at-bats out on the field, trust himself. I think he's noted publicly that he feels like when he was in that playoff run and he had the showing the power in those short periods of time, that he got away from what he normally did. And so he has to get himself back on track. I think he's capable of doing it, but still very much bullish on his talent.
John Mozeliak sitting down with us right now here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. I feel like it's already been evident the impact Dexter Fowler's personality has. He just seems like a really happy human being. What have your thoughts been so far on his impact in the clubhouse camp?
I think it's a little early to say as far as like impact, but I think your observation is dead on. I mean, he's just has an infectious personality. He's obviously somebody that you know, when he speaks, he's thoughtful. He understands what he's talking about. You know, I find him like extremely charming and someone that I think is just going to be a very positive influence on this club in many ways. And so I'm thrilled that he's a Cardinal. I think when I look at what he's going to bring to the city of St. Louis and to the team specifically, I think it's just great news for us to have someone like that that has the social awareness that he has, the understanding of what's going on in the world, and I admire that.
I felt like he caught unfair BS for what he was saying was impacting his wife and his daughter with the comments a couple of days ago. How do you guys view, not necessarily Dexter's comments, but as an organization, a player speaking, you know, what you just made reference to, Mo, social awareness?
Well, a couple things. One is what he was commenting on was something that was affecting him personally. And as you can imagine, if someone asks you a question and it directly affects your family, you're going to have an answer. And you certainly should. And I don't think what he said was a political barb at anyone other than the fact that he has family that can't get into the country. And then secondly, when I think about the organization, Major League Baseball, he represents both, but he also represents himself. And for him to be able to have the ability to have freedom of speech or the ability to comment on any issues, I think that's welcoming. And my third point is, and probably the point that I admire most about Dexter is, he's actually aware. He understands what's going on in the world. It's not like it's just someone that's like making some off-the-cuff comment with nothing to back it up. He understands, I've followed him on Twitter for a while now, and I think just his presence on what he means is going to be important to all of us. When I say that, it sounds a little dramatic, and I don't want to overplay this, but it's just nice to know that you have a player that has that social awareness of what's going on, and not just, you know, nationally, but even specifically of what's going to be going around St. Louis. And I do think he's going to make an impact on that, and I think, again, I think it's going to be positive for the 24 other players. It's going to be positive for the St. Louis Cardinals and hopefully for the city of St. Louis.
Fowler, good on base percentage, guys. Diaz, Carpenter.
Back to baseball.
I enjoyed that line. Do you follow us on Twitter, by the way?
Yes, he does.
Why are you answering for him, yo?
Well, because I don't know, but he sees all. I can tell you that much. Is that true? Yeah. He sees all.
Well, might have to back down on some of my retweets.
Well, hold on, but so one of the
things, especially Mr. Family Guy,
we have discussed. Are you wagging?
You just wagged your finger at me. It was like Joe Namath running off the football field.
I'm going to switch back. Why are you wagging your finger at me?
No, keep on the baseball. He knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean, it's how I built the business.
I don't look at Twitter like, you know, everything you tweet, but mostly it's Cardinal birthdays. And,
right, really.
You know, that
really.
I've seen.
Some of it isn't.
No, mostly Cardinal birthdays and things about finding Bigfoot.
That's correct.
You guys lost an awful lot of power. You get Fowler, good on base percentage guy. You know, you figure Diaz, Carpenter, all good on base percentage guys near the top of the lineup. Are you guys going to be like a totally different operation offensively, or do you think you will retain some of the power last year in spite of losing some of the guys that hit a lot of home runs?
I would say I think the perception of this power drop-off is probably not as dramatic as people are making it out to be, but more importantly, what you want to be able to do is just score runs, right? So that's the name of the game, and whether that means having more athleticism, being able to go first to third, and taking advantage of opportunities, that's really the goal of this club. And so, you know, obviously it's early on. We haven't played one game in spring training as of yet, but that's what I would anticipate you're going to be able to watch. And I do think it makes for more exciting baseball, but I do think our run production should be equally as high.
Can we get back to the Twitter thing? What kind of social media policy do you have to the players?
Well, I think this is
important. Okay, that's a fair question.
Because
I thought you were going a different direction.
No, we're in a world where one...
I'm
going to
apologize.
One bad tweet can really...
Kidding. All right. No, keep going. Don't lose track.
Well, I haven't lost track. I just keep getting interrupted. The question was a simple one, really. What kind of social media policy do you have for players, knowing that you say one bad sentence, one bad tweet, and, you know, the whole world comes unglued?
Yeah. You know, it's a great question,
and
I feel like when you think about from an organizational standpoint, we certainly want to provide all the players with tools to understand how to best utilize social media, because this generation certainly does it. But you got to be careful, and you have to understand what topics will create ire, if you will, with the public, and we just try to give them advice on how to manage that, and of course. Mistakes happen. Sometimes in the world, when you make one, you can't recover. Others can. And, you know, we just try to give them the right path to avoid that major misstep, if you will.
I would imagine that it would be a very difficult decision for a guy like yourself who understands people have opinions and you're not trying to police that. When it's time to say something to a player, I don't know a case, but will you look at something going on their Twitter feed to say, maybe that's not a good idea for you and us?
Well, I think you always have to remind yourself you live in a glass house. And if you do that, don't throw stones, because ultimately it's going to come back and get you. And so, you know, I certainly like the idea of having people that are socially aware, that are socially active, that have opinions. And I admire that. It's just there's lines you can cross when you start to offend people. And that's something that we want to make sure our young players have a good understanding of. You know, veteran players, most older players don't even do much on social media today. It's more of that younger generation, and that's the one that we have to focus on training and making sure we educate.
We had Eduardo Perez, and he said one of the things that he thinks takes away from chemistry and team building is that everyone's on social media and kind of players can do their own things. Do you think that there's anything to that younger generation so tied into social media kind of interferes with the bonding process?
I don't feel social media is what's pulling it apart. I think it's these.
Yeah, the phones.
It's more of like when you walk into a clubhouse and you see, you know, head down, thumbs moving. I don't put the parallel to social media. I just put the phone out there, and who knows what's actually taking place, right? I mean, you could be playing a game, solitaire, towards you know, getting your news feed that day. But you know, everybody uses it for different reasons. But I do feel that interaction's changing, and I hear parents talk about it all the time with their own children. And you have to understand, as we're aging, this other group is coming up, and they're the ones that are more comfortable with technology and how they use it and how they communicate. And, you know, I can certainly, you know, just cite examples of just, you know, contract negotiations. When I first started doing this, everything was over the phone. Sometimes you would fax a version of your offer. You know, today none of that exists. And, you know, you might do a complete negotiation via text. And so it's just the world's changed.
That's got to be tough, because sometimes the negotiations be brutal anyway, but the written word loses the context of the tone of the spoken word.
Well, I agree with that. And so sometimes I just will pick up the phone and go old school. But it's sort of funny to have to say it that way, right? And that's how much is changing right now in our business. And, you know, the good thing about our industry and really industries in general is, you know, if you're willing to accept change, usually good things happen.
They allow phones in the dugouts? No?
No.
It's a definite no-no.
Yeah.
What do you think, guys? The iPad.
I bet they sneak it in there. I bet there's been more than one snuck in the dugout.
It's a pretty steep penalty if you get caught. But you are allowed iPads, but there's no Wi-Fi connection.
Huh. No, that's good.
So just the slow speeds will stop all that.
Well, the idea is so you don't have to carry the thick binders out there. You can upload everything you want from a strategic standpoint as far as scouting reports onto the iPad.
Oh, yeah.
But you can't, like, for example, pull up an instant replay.
Ah, I see what you're saying. Right. That makes
Dave
sense.
Dave Duncan's old school notebooks have been replaced with the iPads.
I still see notebooks out there, but more teams are gravitating to the iPad.
I think Lily still has a notebook, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm sure.
Mo, I'm curious. Our audience is very...
I was just wondering, do you guys have, like, commercial breaks in there?
Not many. We can't sell anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This thing,
I see why.
It's a 501c.
Free radio.
That's right.
I'm curious. You know, our listeners are very proud of the fact that they captured Dexter Fowler in line to fly to St. Louis at McCarran International Airport from Las Vegas in December. So, therefore, they're taking credit, and understandably so, and from my standpoint, Doug, justifiably so, for breaking the Dexter Fowler signing.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts on the morning after fan page impacting Dexter Fowler's coming to St. Louis?
You know, I used to get upset with these things, but I don't anymore.
Can't do anything about it.
Right. And so... had to fly him back private, though, on the way home. Just to let him have some peace. But, and that was probably my mistake for just putting him on a commercial flight to begin with. But anyway.
It didn't look like he was in the A group either.
Lesson learned. No, he should have been.
A group.
Were you aware, though, that it was our listeners that broke that story and another reason why to hold our show in disdain?
So it was one of ten.
That was a painful snipe, right?
Yeah, but tough but fair.
Painful.
Tough but fair. The analytics
are accurate.
What are the odds?
Everywhere. We have tentacles everywhere.
One of ten people could have been in Las Vegas that day.
Now, one of the things...
Not shocking that you're a listener, though. And it was Vegas versus, you know,
one of the
Dallas.
As a hashtag rights holder that thinks the Cardinals are going to be decent this year. I get it all the time. We talk about it on the show. The Cardinals did not do enough to close the gap with the Cubs. You hear that. How do you respond when you hear that?
Very simply, I think, you know, like, we have a lot of confidence in this club. When you look at the pieces we have in place, you know, certainly chasing things to keep up with the Joneses, if you will, it can be a little dangerous. I also feel like when you look at dollars spent this offseason, I think we were the top organization for that. And ultimately, I think it was about being very precise in who we went after. And adding Cecil and adding Fowler, I think, were two key pieces that will make our club better. You know, there's been seasons where we've been predicted to do very well, and there's been seasons we've been predicted to do very bad, and we've outperformed or underperformed both of those predictions. So the great thing about our game is you got to play it, and so that's what I look forward to this year.
Do you see similarities at all between what we saw in the late 90s, early 2000s with that Yankees-Red Sox perceived, you know, war between those two franchises, especially in off seasons? Of course, I played in postseason a number of times with you and the Cubs.
You know, clearly there's a good rivalry, and you know, for many decades it wasn't, but right. Here we are, and it should be a fun matchup. And you look at our head-to-head last year; it was very competitive, and I'm hopeful you'll see a repeat of that this year.
Final question, and Doug, it was getting texted in, so I feel like I have to be the messenger here.
All right.
But the audience, French fry is very important to our audience. I'm assuming you're well aware of that. But they say you're a very healthy guy.
Yeah, we talk about French fries a lot because we're a dumb show.
Right.
Does that put it in context
fries
for you?
Shocking.
Right. So you are a healthy guy. So what's your favorite French fry? What kind of fry, you know, the cut of the fry? Do you like the sweet potato fry lower in the carbs?
Or steak fry. Like, I'm a steak fry guy.
Right. I mean, some people really enjoy the waffle fry, the thin cut with seasoning. I mean, there's a lot of things to work with here.
You're blaming me for this question. Again, you're glaring at me.
I just don't know.
Because it's a great question.
Well, no.
So many options.
I'm a
There's your question of the day, correspondent.
Who's that?
Plowboy. You don't know Plowboy?
Tell him to be quiet. That was distracting.
I'm sorry, Plowboy.
All right, how about this? And if you find yourself having a French fry, I know you're careful about what you eat. Do you put ketchup on it?
Well, I still want to hear the answer to the first one. I mean,
well, he's dodging it. Obviously, he's dodging it.
I would say a traditional fry.
What's traditional fry, though? I don't know what that means.
With a little seasoning.
Ooh, now we're talking, Doug. Now we're starting to talk.
Yeah, this is revealing.
And not baked, but fried.
Nice.
And I would say a little ketchup would be fine.
And, like, where's the last place you might have had fries so we can sort of visualize what type of fry? Because when you say standard fry, there's so many.
I had a few fries the other evening at Jetty's.
Jetty's fries.
Those are thin fries.
Those are thin fries.
Right. Those are thin fries.
I thought that was traditional.
Yeah, that's traditional. That's the traditional
fry.
That's
what I was trying to imply that I got scoffed at and then kicked off the show because of that.
But I don't know if those are particularly thin, those fries.
Yeah,
they're not that thin.
Well, we're going to go toe-to-toe on this one.
Yeah, right. We'll Snapchat a picture. After game six of the 2011 World Series, you're like, you know what? You unbuckle the belt and you say, yeah, I'm going to reward myself with a steak fry after what David Freese did.
I did not.
Wow, kind of surprising.
It's a good way.
And it's the headline of this interview, that's for sure.
There were some good
I probably had a very nice bottle of wine, though, after Game 7.
Yeah, I would imagine that was probably the case. John Mozeliak, the Cardinal General Manager.
How did we do on this interview? Good?
Grade us out.
It's not for me to grade or judge.
No, it is.
It's really up to all of you. If you feel like this helped your show, then I'm glad I could be a part of it. If it didn't, then... So shame on all of you.
All right, I read body language. I'm going to say A-. Thank you for that. Thank you, John.
Yeah, that's fun.
John Mozeliak, the Cardinal General Manager with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Yes, you can.
Absolutely. Sorry to take it.
Yeah. I think you've appeared about 55 minutes total on our station in the last 24 hours.
This is the best of TMA from Cardinals Spring Training this week on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.